Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Making Seamless Sales show. I'm Art Fromm, and I'm coming to you live from Mars, Pennsylvania, north of Pittsburgh. If anybody's familiar with Pittsburgh, it's in the northern suburbs. And ironically enough, I was on a webinar today, and we were all saying where we are from, and somebody said, "Oh, I've been to Mars." So it's interesting. It's a small little town here up in northern Pittsburgh. Hey, thanks so much, everybody, for joining last week. That was really fun, and I appreciate all the feedback. Had surprisingly, and I'm really happy about this, a lot of people on Facebook, LinkedIn, and other streams. So there's a bunch of different ways you can join, which I'll talk more about in a minute. But I was also very encouraged that family and friends were joining in, and they were able to watch and participate and had a lot of comments and things like that, which I found very interesting because I am trying to keep this both, specific to sales and some of the heavy duty sales, but also I want to make this available and understandable by others who may not be doing sales as a profession, because after all, sales is influence. Sales is persuasion. And we are doing persuasion and influence all the time in our lives, whether it's in our family or in our community or whatever. So the ability for others to take away key lessons is very important to me, and I'll try to keep mixing that in as we go through. Today we have a special guest with us. We'll talk more with him shortly. And one of the things that I want to give everybody a preview to is that there's going to be a free giveaway of a chapter of his book when we get to that point. So I'll explain that more when we get into that segment. I also wanted to say that we are streaming live on all the different medias. So we've got Facebook, we've got LinkedIn, we've got other methods. So if you are live and Jesse, the producer, is watching all those streams right now live, then if you wouldn't mind, just maybe put a comment on there and say where you're calling in from. And I know a bunch of you are calling in from Mars as well, in the neighborhood here, even in my very own household. But if you don't mind, just put in there maybe where you're calling from and what your job title or your job function is. And then I want to remind you that we're doing a small segment at the beginning here to get things going. Then the guest, Steve Bistritz, will be coming on for about half an hour or so, a quarter past the hour. And then the final segment is what I'm dubbing Dear Artie. I kind of figured that out last week when I was talking about this on the show, because I wanted a segment where I'm answering your questions, either live, and Jesse will let me know if anybody has a live question that we'll answer at the end of the show, or if you want to submit it to me, you can submit it through the teamsalesdevelopment.com website. So that's my website, teamsalesdevelopment.com. And if you just go to the contact form, you can submit a question, which I'll review and potentially answer live on air next week. Also, speaking of next week, we have a great guest coming up. Candy, who's from actually a great friend of ours, Candy Gray. She is one of the early reviewers and implementers of my book for which this program is actually named. So Making Seamless Sales is the name of my book and the name of this show. And it is all about making sales as seamless as possible as a sales team, but also for our buyers or whoever is, we're trying to sell or influence. So Candy was very involved at the beginning of this when I was writing the book, and she's going to come on next week to share some insights about the way that she has implemented it and what she does. So that'll be something you can look forward coming up. But again, if you go to the contact form and you want to submit any questions or go through the live streams and submit questions, that would be great. And then that's the way you're going to get the free giveaway at the end of the show for today. So a couple things just to preview where we're going to be landing for today is that whenever we're doing sales or whenever we're trying to influence somebody, have you ever noticed that sometimes you can get things to happen when you run into the right person? And sometimes you just get stalled when you are, talking with what turns out to be the wrong person. I think one really good example of this is whenever you have some kind of problem, whether it's with your cell phone or your internet or whatever, and you're calling a typical, call agent and they have to go through all the typical questions and all those things, and you're sort of making some progress but not really making progress. And then I think we've all figured out that one of the ways you can get better results is to ask for a manager. And of course, now they're a little bit wise to that. So sometimes they will say, well, there's no manager available. They'll call you back later. And then maybe they call, maybe they don't. But the idea with that is we're trying to get to somebody that's of a higher authority or somebody that has more skin in the game to try to help us because we're in the middle of some kind of problem. We're an unhappy customer and we want resolution. And you would think that they should want resolution as well. And believe me, I'm not disparaging anybody that does call centers. I know it's a very, very hard job and we've all had good experiences and we've all had challenging experiences. But one of the things is that that person who's on the other end of the phone should realize and see us as a customer and a client who they're trying to make happy, and they should do everything in their power to help us. The problem is they may be limited in what they're allowed to do. And I don't know if you're anything like me, but I'm pretty well convinced that in many cases, they just unfortunately, and I think this is the company, not the individuals, many companies seem to make these processes very difficult to where, maybe they put you on hold for a while and they have terrible hold music, by the way, if you've ever experienced that. Or they go through it and you think you've got it resolved and you write their name down and everything, and lo and behold, they don't follow up on it. I've had numerous cases where I've had to call back, two or three times after a week or two when they said that the refund was going to be issued or whatever, and it just doesn't happen. So what do? We short circuit that by trying to ask for manager. And very often I've had great success with getting a manager. Now, why would a manager matter besides the fact that, they are in charge of the people? Well, it's because they would have probably more of a vested interest in addressing our concerns. They don't want to lose us as a customer. And anybody that's, involved with sales or marketing, and for those of you who may not, the concept is if you have a customer and you can keep them and they're happy, then they will continue to be the customer. If they're unhappy, not only will they most likely potentially not be a customer, they will also probably tell 10 other people about the bad service. So again, whether we are just providing a service to our community, to a social organization or church, whatever, we want to do the best we can to help others so that they are satisfied. And that's a big theme of making seamless sales. It's about making sure the customer, the client is satisfied. And in a sales environment for business to business sales or SaaS type sales, and if anybody doesn't know about SaaS sales, that's recurring subscriptions. So think about those free apps that you got on your iPhone or your Android phone, and then it usually has something where you hit a limit and they go, okay, now you got to pay for it. Well, if you're happy with it and you continue to pay for it, that's great for them. So customer service should be focused on making a client happy. Sales should have the idea in mind of making the client happy. It's not really about, it shouldn't be about us trying to sell. It should be about making the client happy. So when we have an issue as a customer and we call in and that customer service person is not making us happy, one thing we can and should do is ask for a manager because they are measured on satisfaction of the customer. They don't want to lose the customer and therefore they would be more likely to help us out. So that's just one, example of the type of thing we're going to talk about today in more of a business environment. And what I would recommend is, again, if you are trying to work on any type of sales, one thing that I coined in the book, and again, I'll show you at the break, there's going to be a place where you could get this. And if you're on the audio, you can go to teamsalesdevelopment.com to get more information. But one of the things in the book that I point out is that, especially when it comes to these subscription or consumption type sales, the sale does not end at the point where what traditionally would be called a close of the deal or a close of the sale. Back in the day, and I think I have one of these ancient artifacts here, back in the day, many of us were involved with software sales where the software would come on a CD or a DVD, as the case might be. And when we completed the sale, when we got the sign off for the sale, we would ship the CD to the client. And I'm talking about big enterprise type stuff that's, very, very critical for business continuity and other purposes. And technically, once we shipped that to them, we could consider that a sale, and that entire million, 2 million, whatever it was, $5 million deal or hundred thousands of dollars of deal was actually put on the books as a sale because the software had transferred over to that client. Now, our goal, of course, was to still make them happy, but usually the salesperson went on to go do something else. They went on to the next deal, and it was up to the support people, like the people that you call when you're, having a problem with your phone or whatever. It was up to the support people to have that customer be happy. They might pay a maintenance fee to get some software updates, but sometimes they didn't do anything with it, or they might have bought a full capability and they only used a small part of it. So there used to be this term that was called shelfware. And any of you that have been around long enough have probably heard of that. And it's where the sale was done and the CD was shipped or the thing was delivered, and we took that as a sale, but yet the customer never did anything with it. And that certainly wasn't like advocated as a outcome, but it was often an outcome that frankly didn't really matter to the salesperson because they got the sale. Now it's way different. And this is one of the big changes that made me write the book, and also is why I did this show, is because now a sale doesn't mean that you're taking all that revenue. The revenue often doesn't come until the customer starts to use your solution. I've done work for a lot of different companies where the sale is just what I've coined now is a commitment to consume. So we're getting the client to agree they like the solution, they are going to use it, and they will consume it, and they only pay if they actually consume it. I have some clients that it's based on how many connectors somebody used to connect different systems. I have another client who it's based on the bandwidth that's used. So the more bandwidth that's used, the more the client pays for it. In some cases, it's the amount of data that's stored. And we've all got those iPhone plans where all of a sudden it says, you're running out of space on your iCloud, spend another $9.99 per month and you can get another terabyte of storage or whatever. So those are the examples of client success that happens after the quote unquote sale. In a big B2B sale, we do a lot of work, qualification, discovery, demonstrations, site visits, a lot leading up to that moment of that would normally used to be a sale that was done, but instead it's about getting the customer to consume. So what we're going to talk about today after the break is we're going to talk about the way that we can have the what we're going to call the relevant executive identified who is going to be interested in consuming and making sure that the success is there and how we can find that person and the importance of it. So we'll be coming back in just a minute or so here, and we'll have Steve Bistritz joining us live. So I'll see you right after the break.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Lurice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
All right, everybody, welcome back. And I'd like to go ahead and introduce our guest, Steve Bistritz.
Hi there, Art.
Hey, Steve. Glad to have you with us. So, thanks, Jesse. So, Steve is a dear colleague of mine. We've actually been working together now 25 years. It's hard to believe that, but we got introduced late. I have to think about the way I say 2005. I want to say 2005, but in 2005 we got introduced because Steve was working for a global learning company and I was as well. I was based here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and the global learning company was based in Sydney, Australia. Steve's out of Atlanta, and Steve had a solution that we wanted to use for a client who is based in Toronto, Canada. And I was like the closest proximity working with the global learning company. So Steve brought me up to speed on a methodology called the sales opportunity snapshot. And we implemented that for a client in Toronto, Canada. And I'm very humbled and proud to say that I still have that client to this day. And they are still doing workshops that involve the things that Steve has invented and that Steve and I have partnered with on. So just very briefly, Dr. Steven Bistritz started out in IBM sales. So he carried a bag. He did all the sales roles and knew a lot of different sales methodologies back in the day. Eventually, he was running target market systems and implementing target account selling. So if any of you remember TAS back in the day, that was a big deal of the way that you could identify the market you were going after. And then eventually Steve developed not only the sales opportunity snapshot, but also a workshop called Sell Excel, Selling to Executives. And as a result of that work that Steve did, he did research and wrote this book with his co-author, Nick Reed, who I also know and have worked with. And so Steve's book, Selling to the C-Suite, which is normally up here on my bookshelf underneath there, but I got it out for today. He wrote that. And what we're going to talk about is what the importance of the what we call the relevant executive, somebody who should be very interested in making sure that they are successful in the company and whatever you're selling is successful so that they can get what they need to get out of it. So coming from Atlanta, Georgia, again, nice round of applause for Steve. I'll do it myself.
Thanks,
Steve, do you want to just say just a little bit more about maybe the book and the way that ties in with the Selling to Executives workshop?
Sure. Well, back when I was working for this small sales training company here in Atlanta, after I had spent 28 years at IBM, we did some research on why and how executives get involved with salespeople and why executives even want to see professional salespeople. So we went about doing some research, asking them some questions about selling and about when they get involved in the buying cycle and the sales cycle and things of that nature. And as a result of that, I came up with a lot of content that we used then to develop a number of different sales training programs. But then I also thought, well, this probably would make a good book. And the content of it, the research that we did, and also the sales training programs we put together now form the basis for the book, which is now really in its second edition. It's published by McGraw-Hill. So it's still available and still out there. But before I talk about this concept of the relevant executive, which I think is so important, I want to back up for a minute and talk about a sales campaign that, you know, a B2B salesperson, business-to-business salesperson would be getting involved in. And I tell salespeople that no matter what the sales campaign is, there are three compelling questions that they need to answer in every sales campaign that they're working on, and they ought to be asking these questions multiple times during the sales campaign. Number one, should we pursue this opportunity? What's changing in the client environment that's creating the need for our solution? The second compelling question, can we effectively compete for this opportunity? Do we have a solution that can be integrated into the client environment? And have we been able to articulate the specific business value of our solution to the client executive? And thirdly, most important of the three compelling questions is, can we reasonably expect to win this opportunity? Are we aligned with the most powerful people in the client organization who can help us win the deal? And that powerful person is typically what we call the relevant executive. And I'm going to give you another definition, and I'm going to repeat the definition because I think it's so important. The relevant executive is the executive who stands to gain the most or lose the most as a result of the outcome of the project or application that's associated with the sales opportunity. So what I tell salespeople is that they have to sit on the other side of the desk and view their sales opportunity from the client's perspective. So sit on the other side of the desk, find out who is key to that deal in terms of who's going to either win the most or lose the most as a result of the outcome of that project or application that's associated with your sales opportunity. And if you can both identify that relevant executive and then align with that relevant executive, that's the person who can help you win the deal. And if you're not aligned with that relevant executive, your competitor probably is, and that's why you're going to lose the deal. So when I give workshops on this topic, I'll tell salespeople, look at an opportunity that you lost, and were you aligned with that relevant executive? I would bet you weren't, and that's why you lost.
Yeah.
So that's the importance of, you know, identifying and aligning with that relevant executive.
Exactly. And everybody, if you think about it for a minute, if it's the person that has the most to gain or the most to lose as a result of implementation of the project, and we'll conclude this by coming up with maybe some more secular or basic type examples, but just think of anybody who's got skin in the game, because they have skin in the game and because it directly affects them, just think about what that means for you. Well, that means they're interested in getting the proper solution. They're interested in an outcome that's successful. So once again, the ability to use what you have and make sure that it's really successful for them. And I think the classic example is that in a lot of cybersecurity and IT type sales, there's very often involvement with a procurement person, a purchasing person, who's going to be the one that does the paperwork. But if you think about it, they're not the one that has the most to gain or most to lose. If you're selling a cybersecurity solution, a software solution, that's going to be somebody in the business. So very often, and one thing for everybody to sort of check yourself on right away is, as Steve said, who are you engaged with? And are they really the one that's got the most to gain or the most to lose? So that's a key aspect of why the relevant executive matters. Now, what about finding the relevant executive, Steve? And by the way, everybody, the chapter we're going to give you is the chapter 4 in the book, which is how to find the relevant executive and all the things around it. So tell us a little bit more about what as far as finding and discovering the relevant executive, because very often we might get blocked or we might be stuck with somebody like procurement.
Yeah, and I think, you know, times have really changed because, you know, what happened 20 years ago when we were selling, or 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, most of the, you know, calls on clients were face-to-face. Mm-hmm. You know, you were in the client's office and you were visiting with the client. And in some respects, that made it a lot easier because you could navigate through the client organization, talk to multiple people there, and get a sense for who was asking the right questions, who was asking the key questions, and who initiated the project or application that you're involved with, that your solution is going to address. So that made it a lot easier. Now, when we're conducting a lot of these meetings on Zoom, as we have the right person in that client organization. But you know, you got to go back and look at sometimes the organization structure, the organization chart. That'll give you an idea of the formal power. It won't show you the informal power. You know, that person who's got the most skin in the game for this particular application or project. But you've got to kind of start asking some good questions of different executives and finding out the answers to those questions, and that will help you navigate the client situation a little bit easier. And sometimes then you can sort of sense out who's asking the right questions, who has told you that this application or project is so important to them for whatever reason. And you have to start asking those right questions and thinking about some provocative questions that you can pose to those executives so that you get an understanding from them about the answers that will, again, feed you the information that tells you if they're the relevant executive or not. Yeah. Now, you're dealing with multiple executives in the client organization. The thing that you have to understand is irrelevant executives will never tell you that they're irrelevant. Okay. Exactly. So you've got to find that out for yourself. And sometimes you have to find out the hard way. Okay. But, you know, you've got to keep your eyes on the ball. You've got to keep asking the right questions. And you've got to talk to multiple people in the client organization, because that's the only way you're going to get a sense for who that relevant executive might be.
Yeah. And part of the sales opportunity snapshot methodology, of which Steve described those three questions as we started this, is to identify what is the business issue? What is the business need? What are they actually working on? And I know with a number of different clients that I've had, when we really think about the person we're working with, if the business need is like to, you know, get an alternate supplier or to find the lowest price provider of a software solution, you'd really have to ask yourself, is that the relevant executive? Probably not. There's a business need. They're doing this for a purpose. And that purpose is what we want to identify, because that's going to help point us to the right person. So one of the things is to ask questions of whoever you are involved with, of what is the purpose of this project? Who? One thing I learned many, many years ago was, what are you going to do with what we give you? So even if you sign off on the dotted line with a purchasing person, what is our solution going to be doing inside that company? How is it going to enable something? And they should be able to help lead us in the direction of who's asking for this project. Where does it happen? And if anybody's in like cybersecurity, IT, or any type of software applications, be aware if you're involved at a lower level, like just the IT department, because they are a service to the rest of the organization, and the rest of the organization is who's benefiting. And that's probably where the relevant executive comes from. So when we come back from the break in just a couple minutes, we're going to dig into how do we align ourselves with that person? Because finding them and understanding who they are is one thing, but alignment to that person is really critical. And we'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. Misalignment within your sales team or with the client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hey Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A-Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A-Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. So we're talking about the relevant executive, the person that has the most to gain or to lose as a result of the outcome of the project or the solution that we're helping them to buy to solve a problem. And we talked about identifying them and, you know, some of the ways that we can get at the relevant executive. That's not enough, though. There's other methodologies. Sometimes there you might be advised to find a champion or something, or, you know, look for maybe an economic buyer and things like that. And while those are part of what we're talking about, this is a much broader and deeper. Steve already mentioned about their formal power or authority, which comes from their level in the organization. But what we're really talking about here is the informal influence to get things done, because they're motivated to want to have the right solution. So let's talk a little bit about the challenge and the importance of being a trusted advisor, which I know is an overused term, but what does it mean, Steve, in terms of being a trusted advisor or aligning with the relevant executive and the importance of that?
Right. And as Art said, you know, that term trusted advisor has been bandied around for many, many years now. And I first heard it, I don't want to tell you back when, okay, but it was from an executive at Hewlett-Packard, actually, who coined that phrase the first time I ever heard it used. And I don't know how many years ago that was. But anyway, the concept of the trusted advisor is so critical, because in order to become a trusted advisor of an executive, you have to do some things for that executive. And most importantly, when I ask a salesperson, okay, do you think you have a trusted advisor level relationship with this executive? And they'll raise their hand and say, absolutely, we do. And then I'll say, okay, tell me what that executive has done for you or to you to demonstrate that they perceive you as a trusted advisor. And if they can't answer that question, you probably don't have a trusted advisor relationship. Now, and going back to my sales history with IBM many years ago, and back when I was selling at Target Account Selling, and when I'm in my own company, I probably could talk to you about 50 or 60 executives who I truly had that trusted advisor level relationship with. And that's where, when they would call me in and share with confidential information with me, they would put me on their team sometimes to help develop a particular application or project, so that I had some inside information about how my solution would fit in with that particular application or project. So it gave me some advantages. But I always look at, you know, what is that customer executive done for us? And then how do you become perceived as a trusted advisor? How long does that take? Well, it can take anywhere from a single meeting. I've had it happen in a single meeting, where the customers start asking some good questions. I'll give you an example. We had a major professional services company come to our when I was working for Target Account Selling, and they came to our office and they said, well, we'd like to implement your solution, but we want to make some changes to the content. And our CEO was a hawk on not making changes. He didn't want to change anything within our workshop content. Any of the material, he didn't want to change for almost for any reason. It was really designed, first of all, for high-tech computer hardware, software, technology companies, and that nature. And here we had a professional services company come to us, and they wanted to make some changes. And when I talked to the executive, I found out who the relevant executive was pretty quick because he was asking the pointed questions. He was asking the difficult questions. And he said to me, Steve, he said, I want to make some changes to your content. Is that okay? And I said, Norm, I said, I'll make the changes to the content if it does not impact the integrity of our solution, because we know that this solution works. And if you want to make some cosmetic changes, we might be able to accommodate those, but we might not do everything that you wanted to do when you initially asked us to make that change. And we won that deal. It was a $2 million deal for implementing workshops throughout the world. And later I went to that executive and I said, Norm, I know we had a number of competitors out there. Why did you pick us? And he said, well, Steve, when I asked that question of some of your competitors, they said, oh, yeah, sure, we'll do anything you want. We'll make any changes you want. And I saw that all they were out for was to win the deal. But you were looking out for our best interests when you answered that question for me. So that I became a trusted advisor to him very, very quickly, you know, in a single meeting. And we had a relationship that lasted a number of years. Mm-hmm. As he implemented our solution, you know, around the world. So again, a real quick example. Now, you know, Art talked a little while ago about formal power and informal power. And I want to give you an example of how that plays out in the political environment. Okay, that's away from business to business selling. And if you go back to the first George W. Bush administration, he had a Secretary of State, and I'll ask the question, how many remember who that was? Most people do, Colin Powell, okay? Colin Powell was the Secretary of State. But where did George Bush go to get answers on affairs of state? He didn't go to the formal power, the Secretary of State. He went to the informal power, and that was Condoleezza Rice. And Condoleezza Rice was the national security advisor. She didn't even sit on the cabinet, okay? But George Bush talked to her virtually every day. He had lunch with her often. She would come and have dinner with Laura and George at the White House, and she would accompany him and his family to Camp David on weekends. So they had a great personal relationship that went beyond that. So that was where the center of informal power was. And that was more important than the formal power that Colin Powell had. So just an example of how this translates across across lines, not out of the sales environment, for example. But yeah, in the sales environment, you're looking for that relevant executive because they can exert a level of informal power that can usurp the formal power that's given by the organization chart, for example. And the reason they'll win in that particular situation is because they've got the most to gain or the most to lose. Yeah. So their neck is on the line for that project or application. So that's why it's so important to find out who that relevant executive is and then to, as quickly as you can, align with that executive.
Yeah. I want everybody to make sure you don't miss the distinction between that formal and informal that Steve just described, because if we looked at an org chart, which is right, usually about all that a sales organization has to go on, right, is the org chart of the client, that shows you the hierarchy. Now that will tell you something, because the higher up, the probably the quicker they can decide and the more power they have to move things around. But even the idea of like an economic buyer or a champion doesn't describe the whole story. It's about that informal influence, the connections behind the scenes that we really want to do. And the methodology that we have, the sales opportunity snapshot methodology, which, by the way, for anybody that has CRM apps, it is available in Salesforce and in Dynamics 365. So it's embedded in the CRM system, which is important. But that informal influence is so important. And I'll give you a quick example. The client that Steve and I initially got engaged with, who I still thankfully have a client to this day, they were starting to track, you know, we used to have, and you remember this, Steve, like quarterly business reviews with them. Yeah. And we would track exactly based on their salespeople's testimony of the methodologies we're implementing, which is exactly what we're talking about here. Sales opportunity snapshot and selling to executives. That's what they were implementing initially. And they would look at their salespeople to find out the impact on their salespeople. Well, the numbers were off the chart. I mean, they increased their win rate by 16 points from 58% to 74% in the first 2 years. And this was a large company. They increased their bookings by like 22%. So from the CEO, who was the one that drove this project, so talk about formal influence, right? Formal authority, I should say, or power. The CEO is driving it. They knew from the top that this project was successful. And that's why I'm still engaged with them to this day. Now, here's what happened. About 3 years in, their procurement people, the purchasing people, came to me because I was running the deal at the time. And they said, Art, we've done a lot of workshops with you already. We're going to be doing a lot more in the future because, you know, this seems to be working. And therefore, you need to give us a discount. And they said, They wanted the workshops discounted based on volume. And I said, well, there's two problems with that. Number one, it doesn't work like that because everybody that goes to the workshop gets value. So the amount that's invested by the company is directly paid back. And I said, secondly, if you really are serious about that, I'm going to have to unfortunately tell the VP of sales and the CEO of the company that I can no longer implement the solution that's making them so successful. And it was a little bit tongue in cheek. And I don't know if the wording was exactly like that, but almost as quickly, because they knew who those people were and they knew that they had the formal power, but also they were the relevant executive. They kind of said to me, okay, never mind. We'll pay what you're asking for it. So that's an example of that procurement person had no vested interest in the actual outcome and was trying to beat me up based on price, when in reality, the relevant executive who was getting the gain out of it, they saw the value and they could then influence that purchasing person to say, no, we're going to go forward because it's worth the investment.
One last point on that. And I know we're short on time here, but Art pointed out some real key points there. Number one, when you're talking at the procurement or purchasing level, okay, those people don't understand and can't communicate value. Okay, they only understand price and discounts. That's how they're motivated. That's how they're measured. But people at the top or the relevant executive and higher, okay, those people understand value. And when you're communicating value to them, they understand it. And they understand the value of doing business with you as opposed to doing business with your competitor, for example. And when you're embedded in an account like Art has described, that value is year after year. And for them to make a switch now, they have to really consider what the difference in value is going to be if they change to a competitor. Yep. And that's what's really stopping them from doing that.
Exactly. So listen, everybody, first of all, Steve, thank you so much for the time and for the insights. Connect with Steve on LinkedIn. There's information in the show notes and in my website, teamsalesdevelopment.com. And then please either preferably go to the website, fill out the contact form, and just mention that you want the PDF chapter of Steve's book. He's gracious enough to provide that to us. Or you could pick up his book on Amazon or any of the other outlets, Selling to the C-Suite with Steve Bistritz. So Steve, it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate it. I know Thanks. We'll be talking again because we always do throughout. Yeah. And everybody else, thank you so much for allowing Steve this time to share with you some insights. When we come back from the break, we'll finish up with a Dear Artie segment, and that'll include perhaps an example of a more common relevant executive that we might run into on a daily basis. So thanks again, Steve. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you. Good to be with you, Art. Thanks.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Ready to serve up success with a splash? Hi, I'm Bruce Kramer, a.k.a. the Corporate Cockroach.
I'm the Renaissance Woman, Angie Snowball.
And I'm your strategy doctor, Dr. Navtej Dasanjh, inviting you to serving up success with a splash.
Join us as we shake things up with real talk and real strategies centered around awareness, action, and accountability.
And yes, there really is a cocktail involved. Please join us and sip your way to success.
Serving up success with a splash, where wisdom meets happy hours. Cheers!
Cheers!
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Welcome back. So what I wanted to do just now, and a reminder, if you want that free chapter from Steve's book, the complimentary chapter of Steve's book, just go to teamsalesdevelopment.com, go to the contact page, and then fill out the contact form and mention that you heard it here on talkradio.nyc or on the Making Seamless Sales show. Either one, I'll know exactly where it came from. But we'd love to share that with you. And by the way, I didn't mention this before, but if anybody's been around long enough, Spin Selling, and I have that book up here too, Spin Selling is really what got a lot of this started in terms of consultative sales. And Neil Rackham, who wrote Spin Selling, is the one who did the foreword for Steve's book. So you could tell it's a tight community, all focused on building on each other's ideas and expanding them further. And Steve has really taken it to the next level. So I didn't see Jesse put anything in the comments yet about any live questions that we have, which is fine. I know we're just building the viewership. And if you're watching this recording, feel free to jump into the website and use the contact form to provide a question, a challenge, something you'd like me to address live on a future show. I'm happy to do that. I do have a situation, though, that came up that I was asked about, and I wanted to share this with you so we can maybe diagnose this a little bit in the context of the relevant executive. So I was working with a client, and they said, we have a problem, because they happen to sell design services. So they would go in, and they have, you know, architects, and they have designers and engineers and others, and they have all the systems and equipment to do that that can help a company when either they don't have enough person power because they have a big project they need to take on, or their other typical client is somebody who is lacking some level of expertise. Maybe there's a certain type of design for manufacturability or other type of design constraints that the client that they're trying to service cannot do on their own. So they provide the people, the systems, and the brain power to help anybody with what their designs are. And they were saying that they were having challenges because there was this one company that they were trying to sell their services to. It was definitely a company that needed their services. But what they said would happen is they were working with the head of design. So there's one clue for you right there. They're working with the head of design, the person that ran the design department. And they said what would happen is he would get all fired up about a new project that they needed, and presumably was going to bring on this person that I'm talking about who sells the services. He wanted to bring them on board to ramp up for this big, huge, new, amazing project. And they would just start to sort of get ramped up and not quite sign the contract yet. And all of a sudden, the head of design would say, oh, never mind, that really didn't go anywhere. And then there wasn't the need for the design services. So this happened several times, they were telling me. And their question was, what do you think is going on here and what can we do about it? So I thought this is perfect for our show about the relevant executive, because what I started to say was, let's ask some questions. What was it that made that head of design think that they had such a great idea that they got all fired up and they were about to hire you, but then it seemed like it died and it did that multiple times over? I said, who were they trying to sell to internally? I mean, was this head of design coming up with these ideas themselves? And it turned out, as this person was, you know, being retrospective about what's going on, they said, yeah, it seems like they had a great idea and they were trying to push it into the organization as this new thing that the company, that their company, the client company should do. And it seems like that's when it was dying. So I said, well, let's take a look at what's the business need here. What's really going on? Sounds like the business need is design services, but it isn't really, that isn't really the business need. That's an enabler. The design services are what helps that business to make their machines or do their manufacturing or do their computer programming to make their milling machines work or whatever the case is. I said, I think what might be going on is we're not working with the relevant executive. What if we were able to help the head of design think about the way that they can make themselves more relevant or interesting? And again, going back to what Steve said about value, somebody in that company is not valuing what the head of design is proposing. And it might be the best idea since sliced bread, and it might be exactly what the organization needs, but that head of design's running up to resistance. So what we did was we planned together ways to ask questions around what are those projects, and for the head of design, and this is important, everybody, help the head of design to essentially sell internally so that he or she could get to the relevant executive inside that company. So if the design was to help the manufacturer of, let's say it's a brand new product, well, certainly there must be a product manager or marketing manager whose butt is on the line to make sure that that product goes out the door on time and on budget and with proper quality. And the head of design could very well have this revolutionary idea that would enable his company to be able to produce that product in a way that would satisfy one of those people. And if you just think about an org chart for a minute, going back to the formal power, the head of design is not going to be one of the C-suite executives. So again, we were talking about selling to the C-suite, a CXO, a COO, a CMO, or a CFO, a lot of C's there. But one of the people I think would be very important would be maybe it's the chief technology officer who has started to implement a new technology for their customers. Or maybe it's the chief marketing officer who's responsible for a marketing campaign that introduces this new product, which allows their company to win more business. Now, if the head of design can go to a chief marketing officer and say, hey, you know that new product design? Well, let's collaborate together and see what we could come up with for new design to help that. And oh, by the way, and this is where my client comes into play. Oh, by the way, I have somebody I can partner with who has cutting edge new design capabilities that will allow us to work together to design that product, to make it something that's going to compete in the market, that's going to allow them to gather more market share and get it out on time, on budget, so that they are first to market with it. Now, all of a sudden, that's the relevant executive that my client, who's trying to sell their design services, should be looking for. So one of the methodologies here, one of the things to think about is, how can we help whoever we're working with, whether it's that procurement person that's trying to renew a contract for training and wants to look like a hero to the CEO by doing the right thing by them and, you know, fulfilling the contract in a way that's satisfying for everybody, or it's the head of design who probably has been frustrated a number of times because they tried to do something internally and it wasn't going anywhere. If we can work with them to help them sell internally. Now they work with the true relevant executive who has skin in the game, who can make things happen. They can allocate budget. They can allocate resources. They're going to see what the value is. And now the head of design isn't just a service organization providing some designs or providing ideas that don't go anywhere. They're a key enabler of that capability. And whether it's this type of situation or whether it's an IT situation or other type of situation where you're dealing with sort of a service person or intermediary, like a procurement person, think about the way that you can make them successful. And the key thing here is who's got the most to gain or to lose? Not the head of design in this case, it's who they are helping. Once we find that person and they can introduce us to them, now our enablement of design and design's enablement of the product solution makes everybody win. And when we focus on a client success, then that means we will be seen as a trusted advisor. And guess what's going to happen the next time they come up with an idea? I think not only could the head of design come to us, but maybe the CMO says, hey, you know that company that helped you with that last design that was so successful? The CMO may proactively want to work with not only the head of design, but with us to come up with what's the next greatest, best idea, because they might see, and again, back to Steve's point about being that trusted advisor, how we can move forward. So that's a sales, that's a heavy duty business to business consultative sales example that probably a lot of the audience and many of my connections on LinkedIn can relate to. For those of you that are on, you know, Facebook or friends or family or whatever, again, boiling it down to something practical, I would say, if you are involved with somebody who doesn't seem to be getting it or doesn't seem to have an interest in what you are trying to do, see if you can escalate it. And yes, in that case, we're talking about formal power, but that formal power, like the manager of a call center, not only has formal power to make things happen to satisfy you as the customer, but they also should have the vested interest in satisfying you and making things right. And don't be surprised if they start to offer, you know, a free month of services or other types of things for you that they can do to help you move forward. So keep that in mind. Maybe another idea is maybe the hostess or the person that you meet at the front end of a restaurant might put you in a queue. But maybe if you know the maitre d', or maybe you know the chef, you know, that's how you could get the good seat at the restaurant. So once again, they're a person that has a vested interest in the outcome. So with that in mind, I will be putting up on the website the results from the show today. So if you take a quick look here, we've got the graphic that I've been showing you. And then I also just wanted to show you quickly the ability for you to find out more about the show. So go to teamsalesdevelopment.com. The show information is there. You'll be able to see the replays of the shows. You'll be able to dig into more information about Steve. And then tune in next week when my special guest Candy Gray comes on. And Candy's going to help us understand the way that she's put some of this into action in the business that she's in, which is to help design very, very complicated security and other type of systems for large, large clients, including huge chains, restaurant chains, and other people like that. In the meantime, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Happy to help you if you have any sales needs. And if you're interested, you can dig in deeper by getting a hold of the Making Seamless Sales book on any of your favorite outlets. So thank you all, everybody, for being here. Really appreciate the time. And thank you again, Jesse, for producing, and for Steve for really great insights on selling to the executive, selling to the C-suite. Until next week, if I don't hear you before then, if from you before then, I'll see you in a week, 7 p.m. next Thursday night. Thank you, everybody, and take care.
Uplift. educate, empower.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.